The following is a lecture on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter Number 10, Text Number 17, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on September 12, 2012, at ISKCON Sanskrit Academy in Sri Vrindavan Dham, India.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The living force, being agitated by the Virat Purusha, generated hunger and thirst, and when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. Purport. The process by which all living beings in the womb of the mother develop their sense organs and sense perceptions appears to follow the same principles in the case of the Virat Purusha, the sum total of all living entities. Therefore, the supreme cause of all generation is not impersonal or without desire. The desires for all kinds of sense perception and sense organs exist in the Supreme, and thus they take place in the individual persons. This desire is the nature of the Supreme Living Being, the Absolute Truth. Because he has the sum total of all mouths, the individual living entities have mouths. Similarly with all other senses and sense organs. Here, the mouth is the symbolic representation of all sense organs, for the same principles apply to the others also.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jathapada Kamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bharijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakam Vitam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pushchat Yadesha Tarine.
So, people sometimes wonder, they analyze the human body. Well, why do I have hands? Why do I have sex organ? Why do I have... why this type of body? This type of construction? See, why not another type of body? Why this type of body? People, they wonder. So Darwin, he came up with an explanation. Why we have these type of forms. Darwin gave us the answer. By natural selection, it just came out like that. But actually, there's never been any proof of one species becoming another species. It's simply a theory. It's never been proven. It's simply a theory, that's it. There's no proof for it. If we came from the monkeys, then why the monkeys are still here? If everybody is evolving to these, if everything evolves towards this form, then why the other forms are still there? Why the monkeys are still there? We're here. There's so many holes in their theory. Our God brother, this kind of devotee actually, he's made a very nice book, Challenging Darwin, published by the BBT. Everyone should read that book. Very, very expertly defeated Darwin with all kinds of arguments, very scientifically presented arguments. So here we get the proper understanding of how actually this, you know, why we have a mouth, why we have genitals, why we have eyes, ears, everything, the nose, the hair. And why have hair here and I don't have hair here? And you see, we want to ask all these kind of questions. Why I have an eyebrow here, I don't have an eyebrow here. You see, why this way? Why this particular construction? And then from this we understand. What is there in Krishna, you see, that we get? And the Bible also says the same thing, that man is made in the image of God. And what the atheists do is they say, actually, we have invented God in our image because we have this human form. We imagine that God has a form like this, like in the Sistine Chapel in Rome. They presented God as a human being, you see, in a regular human body, but very old. He's a very, very old man. So they say that we've invented that anthropomorphism, we've invented God after our own bodies. That if we were dogs, we would imagine God as a big dog, you know. If we were cats, we'd imagine God as a big cat because we have this form, we imagine that God, but that's completely wrong. It's not that we imagine God as a form after, no, we have a form because it is a replica of God's form. And it may be interesting to hear that actually every single jiva soul has a human form. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, when you have some living entities are cows, some are calves, they're all humans. They all have human forms. It's like the example is Kalindi, goddess Kalindi. She becomes a river. She's a female form, but she becomes a river to serve Krishna in a certain way, you see. So in Golok, actually, every living entity has a human form. Every jiva has human form. But they take different forms for serving Krishna, as a flute, as a flower, as a butterfly, as a bamboo tree, whatever it may be. So this human form is really the form. It's really the form because this is Krishna's form. So instead of speculating like the Darwinists are very fond to do, we should simply take the authoritative version of Srila Vyasadeva. This is intelligent, you see. Why speculate? They will go on speculating for millions and billions of years, but they'll never find God by that process of mental speculation. God exists far, far beyond our mental speculation. We can never stretch our brains far enough or make our brains big enough to grasp what is God, you see. But insofar as the Lord reveals himself to us, that we can understand. So instead of trying to stretch our brains to find God, you see, we should become fit receptacles so that God can fully manifest to us. And that is the process of bhakti, you see. The jnan process is imperfect and incomplete. But the bhakti process is perfect and complete. Through the bhakti process, you become qualified for Krishna to reveal himself to you. When God chooses to reveal himself to you by his power, you see, he can give you everything you need. Right now, our eyes are material. Our ear, everything we have is material. But Krishna can give us divine eyes, divine ears, everything divine, so we can actually experience Him in full. You see, by Krishna's mercy. I remember before I joined the movement, I was a songwriter in Berkeley, California, and I have sometimes associating with the devotees. And I was pretty puffed up. I'd been reading some Mayavadi books, you know, how I'm God, you know. So I was pretty puffed up. Mayavadi say we're all God, so I was thinking I'm God. And I was pretty puffed up. I liked the devotees, but I thought they were a little naive, you know. Such a fool I was. Anyway, One day I met a brahmachari in the Berkeley campus, Chitsukananda Das. And I had seen what I thought was a fallacy in the Hare Krishna philosophy, so I wanted to defeat the devotee. So I said, "You Hare Krishna, as you say, your senses are imperfect. But with your imperfect senses, you say that Krishna is God. So how you can say Krishna is God when your senses are imperfect?" He didn't know what to say. The fact is, our senses are imperfect. So what's the answer for that challenge? Of course, later on I find out the answer. I became a devotee later on and I realized the answer for my... I could have defeated myself, but he was a brand new devotee. He didn't know. It took me many years also to really learn how to defeat that argument. But that argument, that Veda is very easily given by Rupa Goswami. What is that? Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai Sevan Muke Hijivado Svayam Vivaspadat Yadaha. Nobody can realize the transcendental name, fame, forms, qualities, entourage, pastimes, etc., 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 of the totally unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead with his blunt, imperfect, materially contaminated senses. It's not possible. You just can't do it. But if one becomes spiritually saturated, if he becomes Krishnized by engaging his senses in the service of Krishna, a jivado, beginning with the tongue, you see, then the transcendental name, fame, forms, qualities, pastimes, entourage, dham, teachings, etc., 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 become totally revealed to the devotee. So, that's what we have to do. You want to realize God? Or do you want to remain in darkness? You want to realize God? Or do you want to remain in darkness? If you want to realize God, then you must purify your senses, beginning with the tongue. And how do you begin with the tongue? You taste prasadam and you chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. You vibrate Bhagavatam, you vibrate Bhagavad Gita, you see, in the beautiful Sanskrit language, you see, you recite these teachings, Hare Krishna mantra, you taste prasad. And in this way, you become Krishnized. So what does that mean, to become Krishnized? What does that mean? When Prabhupada said that we have to Krishnize our senses, what does that mean anyway? That means Krishna has certain qualities. And you have to become qualitatively one with Krishna. Not quantitatively, we can never do that. That's the Mayavadi dream, which will never come true. But qualitative oneness, you see, that we can achieve. We must become qualitatively one with the Supreme. What are the qualities of God? Satchidananda Vigraha. He's eternal, he's full of knowledge, and he's overflowing with unlimited bliss. And he has a vigraha, a form, a transcendental form. So we have to connect with that nature, you see. That nature that we also possess, that eternal, fully knowing, fully blissful, form with form nature. That we have to connect with, that we have to revive, you see. That's what it means to become Krishnaized. You have to stop identifying with asat, and you have to start identifying with sat. Asat means that which is unreal. This material body has reality, but it's not, it's called asat because it's only temporary. The body is real, but it's not me. If I think that it's me, that's asat, you see. Because it's Krishna's energy, it is real, but the illusion is, I think it's me. It's not me. So the first step in God realization is to kick out the false conception of I am this body. As long as you hang on to that conception, you see, yashatma buddhi kunape tri daduke. As long as you hold on to that conception, svadhi kala tradishu bhoma ijadi yatirta buddhi salile nakahrachid janeshu vageshu sa eva gokaraha. As long as you hang on to the false conception that I'm a woman, or I'm a man, you see, or I'm a brahmachari, or I'm a grihastha, or I'm an old man, or I'm a young kid, you see. As long as you hang on to these false conceptions, Bhagavatam says you were simply a cow and an ass. You're stupid. Of course, we love the cow. She's our mother, but actually she's a little stupid. That's why she's put in the same category with the ass for the Bhagavatam. Not that we don't love her. We have to understand she's less intelligent. She's in the same category of an ass. But sometimes the cows are pretty intelligent. You know, they get led to the slaughterhouse. They just stand in line, you know, waiting their turn to be slaughtered. It's pretty horrible. But one cow, the butchers went on their lunch break, and there was a huge wall, but it may be as high as this ceiling. You see, so the cows couldn't get out, or they're waiting to go, you know, in for the slaughter. So one cow said, "But this is nonsense." She said to herself, "This is nonsense." This huge cow, I don't know how much they weigh, but this cow actually jumped the fence. She somehow got back like mystical power, and she actually jumped the huge fence when the butchers were on their lunch break, and she headed for the woods. Hit the trail for the woods and went into hiding. This is in the U.S. That cow went into hiding in the forest and they couldn't find the cow. And they were looking. Where is that cow? And they finally found the cow. By that time, the cow had become a hero for her heroic escape of the slaughterhouse. And they say, "We were granted an immunity. This one we will protect. This cow will never be slaughtered." But sometimes the cows are pretty smart. But generally, they just stupidly stand in line and wait their turn to be slaughtered, you see. So, the cow and the ass, they are considered less intelligent. And if we think I'm this body, we are in the same category. Also, if we think that the place of my birth is a holy place, you see, because I was born in India, therefore India is a holy place, because I was born there. Or, you know, I remember one man, he was going back, this was in Texas, he was going back to Detroit, which is another part of the U.S., during the Christmas time. He said, "I'm going back to the Holy Land, Detroit. They make all the automobiles in the U.S. So I was seeing, yes, this is proof. He said, "I'm going back to the Holy Land, Detroit." You can imagine, you're from America. A Holy Land, Detroit's the Holy Land. But he's thinking, because I'm from Detroit, therefore it is the Holy Land. So we all have this tendency to think, yeah, the neighborhood I grew up, or, you know, where I rode my tricycle around the block, it's a holy place. Where did I have my childhood pastime? Let me go see the place where I was a little kid, that neighborhood where I rode my little tricycle around the block. We have this tendency to think like that. And the place where I was born and where I grew up, that's a holy place. Another illusion is if you consider your family members to be your blood relatives. "Oh, my family is very wonderful. I'm from the Bridge family, or the Jones family, is it? The Smith family, the Patel family, is it? My family is very dear to me." Well, wait a minute. That's how you can think that way, sir. You're on the bodily platform. Don't you realize that we're all one family here? Every single jiva is emanating from Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, "Aham sravasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti madhva badante mam bhuya bhava samandata." I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. That means we're all one family. Even the monkey out there is my brother. You see, the little worm crawling on the floor, the ant, he's my brother, you see. We're all a family here. And this total, even in the other universes, you see, the other planets, what is even the other universes, we're all one family. Because we're all the energy of Krishna, you see. We are called Jiva. We are the separated energy of Krishna. Every one of us. You see. So if you think that's your family, then you're a liberated soul, you see. But if you make a distinction, this person is a member of my family and this person is not, then again you're in the category of cow and ass. And the last part of the sloka, the third item is, if you go to a holy place to take bath or to take darshan, and you don't hear from the sages who reside there, you don't sit at their feet and take knowledge from them, then again you're cow and ass. You may go all the way from Calcutta to Hardwar to take your bath. Oh, I'm a very, very pious Hindu. I've gone all the way to Hardwar to take Ganga Snan. You see, I'm very, very pious Hindu. You see. And there's some sages that, I don't want to hear, I'm very, very pious Hindu. I don't need to hear from anybody because I took my Ganga Snan. Again, cow and ass. So Bhagavatam is very, very clear. We have to hear from the Bhagavatam. We have to hear from those persons whose lives are Bhagavatam. Nashta pareshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yuttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. By regularly hearing classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam and from persons who are living manifestations of the Bhagavatam, all that is inauspicious within the heart becomes destroyed practically to nil. That means you've come to sattva-gun at that point. And then loving service to the Lord becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So that verse talks about two phases, Brahma-bhuta and then pure bhakti. So hearing the Bhagavatam, serving the Bhagavatam, both the book and the person, by hearing the person Bhagavatam, hearing the book Bhagavatam, serving the person Bhagavatam, serving the person Bhagavatam, book Bhagavatam. In this way, first of all, you become free from the modes of passion, ignorance. You see. And then that's step one. And step two, and that's actually called the nishta stage, when you become completely free from passion, ignorance, nishta. And then from that stage, you go on up, you know, you Ruchi, Bhav, Asakti, Nujansi, Nishta. Yeah, from Nishta you go to Ruchi, Ruchi to Asakti, Asakti to Bhav, and Bhav to Prem. So we can achieve everything. We can get initiated devotees, you see. They're struggling on the platform of Anartanavritti, trying to clean all the dirt out of the heart. So if they hear the Bhagavatam regularly and serve the Bhagavatam, person Bhagavatam regularly, then they will be elevated to the Nishta platform beyond Anartanavritti. That's the result, first result. And the second result is they'll be carried all the way through Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prem. But it's just simply by hearing the Bhagavatam and serving the person Bhagavatam. You don't need to do anything else. If you will hear and serve the book and person Bhagavatam, you can achieve all perfection. You will actually realize your sarupa, your eternal identity in Krishna's pastime. But don't try to jump to it now. And though sometimes devotees who are still in the Anartadavritti stage, they want to imagine what their rasa is. I was actually shocked. One devotee was giving a lecture one time, a Sunday feast lecture at a temple. And he told everyone, even the guests, he said, pick your rasa. Everyone pick your rasa, what you would like to be, and start meditating on it. Can you imagine? I was shocked. I had to report him to the GBC. I couldn't believe it. So it was a little bit of a controversy. He ended up getting corrected. I didn't really mean to say it. It just came out of my mouth. He had to back off from that one, because you cannot in the anartha vitti stage imagine what is your rasa. And to do so is actually detrimental for realizing your rasa. Don't try to artificially, it's compared to a man in the hospital, you see. He's on a restricted diet. Now this man happens to really like ice cream, you know. He loves ice, especially mango ice cream. He loves it. But the doctor said, you can't have any ice cream right now. Because if you take it, it'll kill you. You see. You're sick, you can only have, you know, soup. Soup and salad with no spices. Until you get well, and then you're going to have your ice cream, you see. But if he tries to have ice cream when he's in his sick condition, it'll kill him. He has to become healthy, and then he can have ice cream. So, to actually want to realize your rasa, there's nothing wrong with that. I wish I knew who I was. I wish I could realize my sarup and be back in Krishna's pastime. That's a great desire, you see. But if you have a desire to eat mango ice cream, there's no problem with that. As long as it's offered, you know, to the deities, no problem. Prabhupada even sometimes distributed ice cream to the devotees. I know my godbrother Pagosh, can you imagine the great mercy? He'd been out all day distributing books at the airport, and he came back, and Prabhupada just happened to be walking by, you know, and they met each other. And Prabhupada was so happy, oh, Sankirtan devotees come back from the airport, please come in. He invited him to come into his room, and he wanted Prabhupada to hear about everything, the book distribution. But just imagine that moment with Prabhupada, wanting to hear how the book distribution was. And then some devotees from New Vrindavan, they had brought some ice cream for Prabhupada. So he gave the ice cream to the Sankirtan. But just imagine how Prabhupada serve you some ice cream. Wow. So anyway, there's nothing wrong with the desire for ice cream. But if you're sick, Prabhu, you got to wait. You got to wait until you're qualified for the mango ice cream. So we should not try to prematurely jump. Well, I really like to be, you know, one of those cowherd boys, one of those cowherd girls, you know, get to kiss Krishna and hug him and all that. No, don't think that way. You see. That is very detrimental, sahajism. There was a group of devotees in Los Angeles many years ago when Prabhupada was here. Prabhupada was actually in Los Angeles at the time. And they decided they all wanted to become gopis, you see. So they had a little club, the Gopi Bhava Club. They would get together privately in one of the apartments, and they would just read certain very esoteric portions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They weren't interested in Gita. That was low class, you know. But they just wanted this very esoteric stuff about Gopi Bhava, and they just pulled it out of Prabhupada's books, and they would just read that only and nothing else, you see. So Prabhupada was sitting in his quarters, taking his breakfast, you see. Just starting his breakfast, there was a nice piece of fruit there on his plate. He picked it up, and he was on his way to his mouth, and Pajumna came in. He said, Prabhupada, there's some weird thing happening here in Los Angeles. There's this group of devotees. They just get together and talk about Gopi Bhav. Well, you know what happened to that piece of fruit that Prabhupada had picked up? It never made it to his mouth. When he heard about this, he put it down. He canceled his breakfast. Prabhupada canceled his breakfast. He said, call the GBC. Call the temple president. Call the leader of this group. And they all came together, and he chastised that devotee like anything. And that devotee actually blooped. He left the movement. He was attached to this Gopi Bhav. Prabhupada would not tolerate devotees getting together and trying to jump prematurely into their rasa. He would not tolerate it. He was so angry. And that was broadcast all over the movement. Everyone was informed about the Gopi Bhava controversy and Prabhupada's reaction. A newsletter was sent to every ISKCON temple in the whole world. We all knew you don't jump into Gopi Bhav or Gopi Bhav, you see. It's completely bogus. Now, when you come to the Asakti stage, you naturally realize it. It's stated, I've read in Prabhupada's books. Anartha Nivritti, that's the stage we're at. After we get initiated, we battle it out in Anartha Nivritti stage. We're getting rid of our lust, you know, our anger, our greed, our madness, illusion, and envy. And finally we get to the point where the passion, ignorance is gone. We're just in pure, you know, in goodness, without any, you know, situated in goodness. That's the Nishtha stage. Not pure goodness, but it's goodness. And then from there we go to Ruchi, And then after Ruchi, then you actually come to the preliminary stage of pure love. That's called Asakti, or the stage of attachment. And that's you have only one attachment, and that's to Krishna. You're not attached to your body, you're not attached to your wife, you're not attached to your husband, you're not attached to your iPhone, you're not attached to any your harmonium, you know, your Sanskrit books or whatever, anything. Not attached to your dhoti, not attached to anything. Absolutely not attached to anything except Krishna. Everything else can be taken away. Doesn't matter. You say, well, if you want to kill me right now, that's fine. Krishna, you want to kill this body, I don't care. If you want to take everything away from me, I don't care. I can be an avadut living out in the forest. You can send me to the city, distribute books. Doesn't matter. Whatever you want. I have one attachment, that's only, I'm attached to you, you see. Nothing else. Not even a subtle attachment to anything else. Not even a tinge of a subtle attachment to anything. That's a sakti state. And in that stage where there's only attachment to Krishna and nothing else, then you actually realize who you are in Vrindavan. You see. But you can't force yourself to come to that stage. You have to come to that stage by getting the dust of the pure devotee on your head. You see. By sincere service to your spiritual master. By sincere service to Prabhupada and his mission. You see. By humility. By accepting whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness at every step, and also at every step rejecting whatever is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. That's it. To always have complete faith that Krishna will always protect you in all circumstances. So you're not afraid because you know Krishna will always protect you in every situation. To feel completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, that you don't need anything else except for Krishna's mercy. You see. To have no interest separate from the interest of the Lord, and to always feel yourself very, very lowly, to be always very, very meek and very, very humble, you see. So if we will practice these six guidelines given in the introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see, then we will come to those stages, you see. If we're not initiated yet, we'll come to the stage of Bhajana Kriya, initiation, and after that we'll go to Anartanaviti, and then Nishta, Ruchi, Sakti, Bhava, and Prem. Everyone can achieve. Doesn't matter, man, woman, educated, uneducated, stupid, intelligent, whatever our position may be. You see. If we sincerely take up this process, then all perfection will be ours. It's a fact. Krishna will personally reveal himself to us in due course. We'll realize who we are in Krishna's pastimes. And everything will be that revived, that relationship, our eternal relationship with Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan will be reestablished. So, I've got about 2 minutes. Maybe we can stretch a little bit, depends. Any question? Yes?
My question is like this, like, as you know, that due to the combination of man and woman, when father semen enters into the mother's womb, then fetus and embryo develops in the mother's womb. But we see even if there is combination, but they can't produce children. So Srila Prabhupada has explained here the process by which all living beings in the womb of the mother develop their sense organs. So my question is, even if there is combination, why can't they produce children?
Is this in today's purport?
Yeah.
Where sentence does it begin with? Oh yeah, the beginning, okay. Okay.
Okay,
so what is the question?
Is that the father gives the seeds in the womb, there is always a combination. So why even after combination they cannot produce?
Who combines?
Man and a woman.
They do produce children.
Not sometimes they don't.
Oh, I see. Well, that's up to higher authorities. That's up to higher authorities whether they sanction the child to enter at that time or not. The higher authorities determine them. Not that every time people have sex they produce children, you see. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. That's according to higher authorities. If they sanction a child now to take birth at that time.
Depends on the karma or
the... Yeah. That follows the karmic principle, that's right. But it's their karma to have a child, and it's the karma of that living entity. Now your karma has come the yuvadi, you get a body, a human body again. Yeah. It's karmas. That karma is conducted under the direction of higher authorities. They manage karma. Karma managers.
Is there any scientific reason you can
tell us? Is there any scientific reason you can tell us?
Scientific
reason.
Scientific reason for karma?
No, for this happening.
The embryo not developed.
Well, the scientists could go in and say, well, it'd be interesting. They could go in and look, if they could actually, you know, look, put some kind of a observational thing there inside the female body, and it was, look at all that's happening down to the molecular level, you know, when there's a successful pregnancy and a not a successful pregnancy, that'd be interesting if they could do that. But the fact is, you see, the fact is the male semina contains a living entity. So the question is there a living entity in every, you know, sperm cell? That's an interesting question. I never heard Prabhupada mention. My understanding is there is, from what I've read. And sometimes that sperm cell is successfully given a material body, and sometimes he isn't. That's my understanding from what I've read in Prabhupada. The male sperm cells have living jivas in them, you see. And he gets a body, or he doesn't, according to his karma. And scientifically, what happens, it'd be interesting, you know, if they could do that. Be pretty at a high level science, I'm sure they could, they really put their energy into it, they could do that. Down on the, you know, someday in the future they could probably do that, but what's the value of it? We know, already know, they may think, well, we'll manipulate it. We'll find out why sometimes there's pregnancy. It'd be a big business. So many people want to have children, but they can't. And the science, if they could figure out how to make every act of sex a fertile act of sex, it's a big money in it. But they don't know how to do that. And they really can't manipulate it because it's according to karma.
Jung also explained that sometimes it's like desert.
Sometimes
it's like desert. A woman can be sterile, a man can be not.
Yeah.
It's having the Bhagavatam.
It takes two to tango, they said. The man has to be fertile and the woman has to also be fertile. Either the man or the woman is impotent, there's no pregnancy. So the man has to be potent and the woman has to also be potent. This is compared to the transmission of Vedic knowledge also. The speaker has to be potent and the hearer has to be potent. This transmission of Vedic knowledge is compared to sex life. And this is actually a much better sex life, you see. Hearing Vedic knowledge. It's compared to sex life. So we can go, how much they can enjoy sex pleasure for a few seconds only. But we can go on enjoying hearing Bhagavatam for millions of years. We can chant Brahma Samhita prayers, Govinda Madhi Purusham, for billions and trillions of years, non-stop and unlimited pleasure, except the body is in the way, but I'm talking spiritually. There's so much nectar in, you know, Chintamani Prakara Sadma Sukalpa. We could go on for billions of years chanting the Brahma Samhita prayer. So this is much better than sex life, isn't it? Hearing the Bhagavatam, hearing the Brahma Samhita. This is the supreme pleasure, you see. We don't need the so-called pleasure of sex life. Therefore, brahmachari, you see. In Vedic culture, everyone's a brahmachari. You see, the brahmacharis are brahmacharis, the brahmacharinis are brahmacharis. The householders, Prabhupada said also, because they only have sex once in a month for procreation. And then they actually chant 50 rounds before doing that. That's Prabhupada's order. They are also considered brahmacharis. Yeah. Grand up, or you're just scratching? Okay. And then the vanaprasas are brahmacharis, sannyasis are brahmacharis. Everyone's brahmacharis in this Vedic culture. Yeah.
You mentioned about how everybody in the spiritual world has a human-like form also, and you gave examples like Kalindi.
Yes, everyone has a human form.
Yeah. Like, we know we hear many examples, like the Lindy, but is there any scriptural reference that says, like, every Lindy is a...
I must have read it in Prabhupada somewhere in the database. If you could send me an email, I might be able to dig it out for you. Yeah, just send me an email. I'll give you my email address here. I must have seen it somewhere. I'm sure I said it somewhere in the database. I ran across it. And I think I probably bookmarked it in my database, because it's pretty amazing quote. But then I thought of it, but I, then Kalindi is an example of them. So the, yeah.
Prabhupada has said this, that all the jiva have the same form, the two hands and two legs, and just like...
You know, but yeah, so that's the quote he's interested in finding. In other words, that's also mentioned, I remember reading that in Prabhupada's books as well, that... Why do we have two arms, two legs, etc.? Because in our original spiritual form, we have them. But what if our rasa is to be a butterfly in Krishna's pastime? It's still the same principle as that. Okay?
But also we hear from the scriptures that in the spiritual world there is trees and cows, and so is that contradictory statement?
The tree is a human, he has a human form, but he manifests a tree to serve Krishna in that way. That's the point. They all have human consciousness. They all have human forms, but they take that form. Now, just even in Krishna Lila, those demons took so many different forms. The liberated soul has the power to take to assume forms like that. They have the power to do that. Completely liberated. If even a demon in this material world, in Krishna's pastimes, Putana can assume some, you know, beautiful form of a goddess, when actually he's an ugly giant, you see. If a demon in this material world has that kind of mystic power, just imagine the mystic power of the liberated souls in Krishna's pastime. So they can assume any form to serve Krishna according to rasa, you see. Yeah.
But we know that in Vaikuntha, all the jivas, all those living beings, they have four arms.
Yes. Yeah.
So how is it there?
Yeah. That's an interesting question.
And also...
That the... But I can, let me answer that one first, or let me respond to that first. The Prabhupada explains, and I gave this quote one time, one sannyasi, he said, where's the praman? I actually sent him the quote from the database. But Prabhupada actually says that every jiva has full freedom to take any rasa that he wants. That means, let's say you're in Vaikuntha with four arms, you say, I'd rather be a two-armed Goloka Vasi instead of a Vaikuntha Vasi. You can do it. There's full freedom. If you're in Goloka and you think, well, I'd like to always think that Krishna is God, so you can go to Vaikuntha and serve him there. I don't like to not know that Krishna is... I don't like forgetting that Krishna is God. I like to always remember that he's God. So then you can go to Vaikuntha and develop have four arms. You could. So the point is, you can have two or four as you like.
What is that? It is two? Can you say like...
No. Actually, it depends. Depends on your rasa, Prabhu. For some it's two and some it's four. Depending on your rasa.
That means it is two categories.
Yes. That's true. There are two types of residences in the spiritual world. There's the Vaikuntha residence or the Golok residence. That's right. There's two categories there, that's it. But you can switch if you prefer that, want to switch to the other one, you can do it any time. But there are two categories. That's a bit.
Sometimes you see that there is a transformation of rasa also.
Hmm?
There is a transformation of rasa.
Transformation?
Yes, yes. And what do you mean by that? What is the example?
Somebody from Vaikuntha, he transfers to the...
Yeah, that's what I was explaining. One can switch rasas, that's right. It's not that you're locked into your rasa. Well, you have to be a rock forever, you know. No, everyone has full freedom.
Can we have any pramana stating that there are two categories, Rodha having four hands and Rodha having two hands?
Any praman for two categories?
Four hands and two hands, two categories.
Mm-hmm. Haven't you read in Prabhupada's books? In Vaikuntha they have four arms, and in Goloka they have two? How many times have you read that in Prabhupada's books? Isn't that enough praman for you?
Okay.
it's given that Vaikuntha they have four horns.
Yeah.
But as it like a jiva, because one devotee asked me this question, then what is the original form of jiva? Is he having the two hands and then later on?
It depends on the jiva. See, generally people don't switch rasas, you see. Because everyone feels their rasa is the best. That's the general rule. The transformation of rasa is an exception. Everybody's happy in their rasa. Just like an example, the bamboo trees. Well, the bamboo flute's a good example. The bamboo flute, he's actually a human being, but he's taking the form of a flute to serve Krishna in that way. Now, what do you think? Well, here I am a flute. I'm in Santa Ras. I'm not active. I'm just like, you know, I'm not active. I'm in Santa Ras, neutrality. But I've always heard the gopis are in the highest bus. So why don't I just become a gopi? Will the flute think that way? No. Why? The flute thinks, actually, those poor gopis, they only get Krishna's lips every now and then, but I get his lips all the time. You see? So in this way, every single jiva feels that his rasa is the best. Otherwise, why would they be in that rasa? You understand? Every single jiva feels my rasa is the best rasa. If everybody became a gopi, there wouldn't be any gopis. You understand? What does gopi mean? Cowherd girl, right? If all the cows become gopis, then there's no gopis because there's no cows to herd anymore. You see? So by Krishna's perfect arrangement, and the there's perfect balance, it's not that there's too many cows and not enough gopis, or too many gopis and not enough cows. There's a, you know, perfect balance, population balance. There's a perfect number of bamboo trees, perfect number of, you know, mango trees. Everything is perfect in Goloka, and in the Vaikuntha world as well. Everything is absolutely perfect, and everybody is completely satisfied. Prabhu, you have to go there and check it out. You'll be in bliss.
You only asked me a question.
Yeah.
Can I ask something more?
Yeah.
The devotee asked me that then, what is, of course, it sounds stupid question, but he asked that, what if the jiva is a male or female?
Yes, is the jiva male or female? Spiritually, we're all female. Every jiva being Prakriti, female means enjoyed by Krishna. Purusha means the one who enjoys the Prakriti. Prakriti is the one who's enjoyed by the Purusha. So spiritually, we are all females. There is only one male in all of existence, and every other single living being is a female, spiritually speaking. Now, some of those females have male forms as cowherd boys, cowherd men, and some of them have female forms as cowherd girls or cowherd women, you see. But actually, we're all female. But there's cows and bulls also in Goloka. You see, but everyone's in the spirit in Goloka, everybody's in the mood of a female. We're all females in the spiritual world. In the material world, we're all trying to be males, you see. The men are trying to be males. Everybody's trying to be, this is called macho loka, you see. Everyone's trying to be macho here. The women are trying to be macho. The men are trying to be macho. Everybody's trying to be, the dogs are trying to be macho. Ruff, ruff, what are you doing in my street, you see. This is macho loka. Everyone's trying to be big, big macho here, you see. So the material world is macho loka, and the spiritual world is feminine loka, except for Krishna, you see. We're all feminine there. You see. How they can say we're male chauvinists in this ISKCON, because we're all trying to become females, you see. We want to become feminine. That is, Krishna consciousness means stop being masculine and become feminine. In the spiritual sense, now. Not that we're encouraging gay or something like that. We want to become feminine to Krishna. That is our mood. Lord Chaitanya said there is no greater no greater worship than that is exemplified by the Rajavadus, the damsels of Raj. They are the greatest devotees, the damsels of Raja, the gopi girls. Lord Chaitanya worshipped the gopi girls as the greatest example of bhakti. So we follow in his footsteps, and we also worship the gopi girls as the greatest example of bhakti. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Lord Krishna is the cause of all causes. Lord Krishna is the cause of all causes.
Exactly.
So how does this sin, paap punya, sin,
yeah,
punya
yeah.
exists?
Yes.
Everything is the cause of
yes,
causes.
Yes, yes.
Then how it...
Sin exists because of this. Okay. The living entities, Krishna... Just like everyone likes to have loving relationships, right? Do you like to have loving relationships, sir? Yeah. We all want loving relationships. So Krishna, where did we get that quality from? From Darwin? No, from Krishna. Krishna has that quality if he wants loving relationships. So if you force someone, can you force someone to love you?
No.
You can't. You have to give them the choice. I will give you my love, now it's up to you to reciprocate or not, you see. So Krishna does that with us. He gives us the choice to love him or to leave him, you see. So he is the cause of our free will, that's a fact. So indirectly, he is the cause of the sin. But directly, we are the cause, and he's indirectly the cause, you see. You can say indirectly is the cause because he gave us the choice. But directly we are the cause because we misuse that choice.
This free will is given only to the human species. Free will. Lord Krishna has given free will to the human species only.
No. Yes and no. I'll explain what I mean. Every living entity... The animals, the plants, they were also human beings. And this is their punishment for their sinful activities when they were a human being. So everyone here is actually a human being. But they're covered, that's all. By plant consciousness, dog consciousness. Therefore, a person who lives like an animal now, he become an animal in his next birth. When he lives like a plant now, he'll become a plant in his next life. I was amazed. Went out to Haight-Ashbury in the tail end of the hippie era there in 1969. There's one hippie walking around. He dressed himself up as a plant. He put tree branches in himself. He was walking around like a tree. He was thinking he was a tree. He actually put branches. He had branches and he walked around. And that was his thing, you know, he dressed up as a tree. And I was going, wow, you know, I was thinking back to that. He's preparing for a tree body, is he? So he was thinking, you know, trees, why can't I become a tree? Tree is a very nice thing. So he'll become tree. So actually, they're all human beings, but they're being punished for their sinful activities when they had human consciousness. And once they burn off sufficient amount of that sin, then they get a human birth again. And if they'll continue to burn off the sin in the human birth by taking a bhakti process, and they'll go back to God. Otherwise, they sin again, they go back down to the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the germ kingdom, the worm kingdom, etc.
This sin, whatever we do, it can be vanished by Lord. If I, at the last age, when we are very old, suppose I have done many sins,
yeah,
and at the old age I am very pious.
Piety is not enough. Piety, being pious is not enough. Piety means you're not committing sins. But you have to go beyond piety to the bhakti platform. You have to surrender to Krishna. Because piety means you're not making any more sins, but piety does not destroy your previous sins. Piety is good because you're not creating any new sins, but you're not destroying your past sins by piety. Bhakti destroys all sins. Even in piety, there are some sins. I notice, for example, you're breathing. You are breathing? I noticed that you were breathing, sir.
Breathing,
yes. You're committing pop while you're breathing. You're killing so many microbial germs right now. You're committing pop right now, you see. So even a pious man like yourself, if he's not surrendered to Krishna, then even in his pious life he's committing sin. So therefore, the only way to become totally free from sin is to surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna says, if you surrender to me, sarva papebhyo mokshayishami, I deliver you from all pap. And it is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita, by eating food which has been offered first for sacrifice, you become free from all sin. By taking prasad, chanting Hare Krishna, you're freeing yourself from all sin. Go ahead.
The question is, you mentioned in the lecture that identification with the relatives, that they are mine, that is not good. Then we are like cows and asses. Even when we come to the spiritual life, sometimes we distinguish among the devotees that these are, say, my god brothers, my sisters, or these are Bengalis, these are like this. So is it also detrimental, and how to overcome it?
Yeah, if we get bodily consciousness, it's not very good. Like, those Indian ISKCON devotees or those Western ISKCON devotees. Not very good. I was shocked to hear in one temple, they're all initiated, but the ISKCON devotees, they're all initiated ISKCON devotees, but they distinguish between those who came from Brahmin caste and those who didn't come. There's like a dividing line in the congregation. These are the Brahmin ISKCON devotees and the non-Brahmin ISKCON devotees. It's completely bogus. Every ISKCON devotee is a Brahmin who takes initiation, you see, he follows his vows, he's Brahmana. So to make distinctions, here's a white devotee and a black devotee or a brown devotee, it's completely bogus. I mean, you're not a devotee at all if you're in that mood. You're a cow or an ass. You're not even a devotee. Have you seen? Huh?
It's offensive.
Yeah, it's Vaishnava Parab. If you see a Vaishnava in terms of his body, it's offensive. One time a man wrote me, he says, yeah, I've chosen a guru because he speaks. I chose this person as my spiritual master because he's from my culture. He's a Gujarati, therefore I took this one as my guru because he's also a Gujarati. This is his decision. I wanted to have a guru who was a Gujarati. Because I'm a Gujarati, I want a guru who's a Gujarati. An ISKCON guru is a Gujarati. This is nonsense consciousness. It means you're holding on to the bodily conception. Once you be completely transcendental of the bodily conception. If you want to come to the Brahma Bhuta platform, if you want to get free of all miseries, and if you want to hold on to the bodily platform, no one's going to force you. But I guarantee you, you're going to suffer, Prabhu. If you hold on to the bodily platform, you're hurting nobody but yourself. You're holding nobody but yourself. Even the male-female distinction, we have to observe it for the sake of protecting ourselves from lust. But if we, in our minds, we think these women are these men are a bunch of weirdos, because they have a body of the opposite sex, then that mentality is very offensive. Yeah, these women. Yeah, women. We all know they're nonsense. No, that's bogus. We have to panditasamadarshinaha. One has to see every living entity equally. Then you're a pundit. If you don't see everybody equally, you're a pundit. You're a fool and a rascal. That's okay. Now, the distinction, it's not that you have to completely blur it out. We do, we use those things in Krishna's service. It's like, we have the women are sitting here, the men are sitting here. We make those distinctions, not to say that they are different. They're not, they're not qualified to sit with us or something like that. No, it's a matter of protecting ourselves from lust. That's it. It's our respect for them that we don't sit next to the women. You see, it's our respect. This is my mother. I respect her. I honor her chastity, you see, by not being frivolous with her in this way. Okay. Next question. Yeah.
Gurudev, you mentioned that cows are unintelligent, right? Cows.
Cows.
Are unintelligent.
That's what Bhagavatam says, yeah.
Yes. But also we drink the milk and we, by drinking the milk,
you become intelligent, yeah. That's pretty cool, huh? From a dumb animal, you can develop super intelligence. Just see Krishna's amazing arrangement. Prabhupada actually said that by taking milk products, he developed the finer brain tissues for understanding Vedic wisdom. That sounds, I like that, you know. Just think of all the milk products. There's milk, which is really nice. Hot milk at night with a little sugar. That's very nice. Or think about, you know, yogurt. Or think about burfi or sandesh or rasagula, gulab jamun, ice cream. I mean, wow. I think I joined the right movement, you know. And that's how I can become intelligent. Give me some more milk products, Prabhu. Give me some more ice creams, another rasagula. This is for my brain. I'm not doing it for sense gratification now. Don't let my brain. Give me another rasagula so I can develop my brain for Vedic understanding a little better. I like this movement. It's pretty nice. Pretty nice. See, we're not vegans yet. Of course, we some devotees become vegans. They say we shouldn't take, but Papa took the milk from the cows that were in the commercial, and the cows benefit. Of course, we want to put a stop to that. We ideally, our goal is to not use any of the Ahimsa milk, only Ahimsa milk. That's our goal, you see. We must do that as soon as possible all over the world. We need to establish our own cow protection programs all over the world so all devotees can simply drink Ahimsa milk. But not that in the meantime we should stop drinking milk. That milk, Prabhupada didn't show that example. Prabhupada took that milk from the commercial dairies. You see. So we should keep taking the milk from any, whatever we have to do, take the milk regularly, develop the finer brain tissues, how to close the slaughterhouses. You see. It's like, this is the argument I use for the vegan devotees, and there are some of them. You can use a thorn to remove a thorn. So we drink the Ahimsa milk in order to establish Ahimsa milk. To give us the, since if there's no Ahimsa milk available, I will take Ahimsa milk, develop the brain tissue, how to put a stop to Ahimsa milk and establish Ahimsa milk all over the world, you see. In this way. So, any other question?
I have a small question. I have a question that the soul and body, always we are told the concept of soul is correct. Concept of the body.
The concept of soul is...
Is right.
Is what?
I can explain.
Okay. You go ahead and say it and she'll explain it to me.
But when suppose a terrorist comes with a gun, then we try to save our soul or body. We try to save our body. Then the concept is always with the body. But after a lot of...
No. You've not understood. This body... Is it yours? Is that body right now, is that yours? Does it belong to you?
Yes, it is five combination of five.
No. Does that body belong to you?
No, actually it's not belong to me.
That's right. You're right. Who does it belong to?
It's Krishna.
That's right. Very good. So, if someone comes to destroy Krishna's property, what will you do?
Oh, to save that property.
Yeah, but if someone comes to smash the temple, we will protect the temple. So this is also a temple. The body is a temple of God. The Paramatma is residing there. So you have a duty to protect your body. Not your body, but the body which is the property of Krishna. It's your duty as his devotee to protect that body. You understand? Because it's Krishna's property and someone's coming to destroy Krishna's property. Even if you have to kill that person, you can do so. That's Vedic injunction. But if an aggressor comes, you can kill that person. You have a right to kill him. There's no sin involved. You kill him. Sometimes it happens. We had aggressors come in our Miami temple one night during milk prasadam. Just a typical night, a little Krishna book, a little hot milk. And all of a sudden, some armed bandits came into the prasadam room. They had stockings over their faces to disguise their faces. They had a rifle and a pistol. And they're ready to shoot. And it's pretty heavy. They had one. They captured Brahmacharini. They had the gun at her head, and the hand over her mouth. She was going. Her the gun on her head. And they came into the Vishadam room. They said, "Everybody, get on the floor." It's pretty heavy. And I thought, "When is this nonsense?" And the Sringadeva will protect us. I didn't get on the floor. Everybody else got in the flow, but I didn't get in the flow. And I yelled out, Nishringadev! Well, that Brahmacharini was relieved of the gun pointed at her head because it got pointed at me after that. And then I negotiated with him a little bit. I said, we're your friends. What do you want? He said, the money. Where's the money? Actually, the treasury, was the temple treasury was just the next room. There was a door right to the treasury from the Prasadam room. They didn't know that. It didn't say treasury on it, thank goodness. So anyway, the temple president just happened to be in the treasury. He didn't know there was a robbery going on in the next room. He came walking out, you know. And he turned around to go back in. I don't think I'll go back in the treasury. I don't want to be here with the devotees being held at a gunpoint. I think I'll leave this room. So they chased him with a gun. They hit him on the head and drew blood from him. They didn't knock him out. They cut his head. There was some blood. But our temple president was a very smart man, very cool-headed. You may know he's in Vrindavan now, I think. Abhiram Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple. He stays at MVT. Very cool-headed. Abhiram is very, very cool-headed under pressure. He told the temple treasurer was sitting there. Now, Prabhupada had told us we could keep guns because there had been an armed attack in New Vrindavan. They came and with guns to shoot the devotees dead. They smashed the deities and everything. So Prabhupada told us we could keep guns and protect ourselves. So we had a gun there. There was a gun in the treasury. The treasurer's desk had a gun in the drawer. And the treasurer was sitting there behind the desk. And Abhiram walked into the treasury and he told out loud, very cleverly, he said out loud so they could hear him, he said, get the gun and shoot the bastards. That's all they had to hear. They were running like scared rabbits out the door. And in those days, the temple president, he was Prabhupada's representative. You did whatever he said without question. So that treasurer, he grabbed that gun. He ran, kapow. He wasn't a good shot. He missed. He hit the wall. Luckily, he didn't hit any devotee. He hit the wall. A bullet went into the wall. And so if we have to, we can shoot the demons. The temple president ordered him to shoot them. Because they were there holding the guns, the devotees, threatening to shoot the devotees. So he was, that was a proper order, you see, to shoot them. Get the gun and shoot those bastards. You see. That was a problem. But actually, by intelligence, the whole problem was solved. As soon as they heard that, they wouldn't expect the Hare Krishnas to meet them with a gun. They thought we were just some mellow, you know, monks, you know, no problem, an easy push-off, you know, an easy robbery. But they learned their lesson. These Hare Krishnas, you don't mess with the Hare Krishnas. Yes. So yeah, if we have to, we can use violence. Like our Abhiram Prabhu, he told that treasure, you get the gun and shoot them. If we have to, we can do that. And our Bhavananda also in Mayapur, the dacoits came and he fired the gun and it drove them away. You see. So we can use violence if we have to and the demons attack us. We are not violent men. But if they come to attack, we can use violence to repel their attack. Gandhi had it wrong. He was asked, if someone was raping your daughter, what would you do? He said, oh, I would remain nonviolent. That's bogus. Someone's raping your daughter, and you're going to let them rape your daughter? It's completely bogus. You see, that is not Vedic culture. Vedic culture is the woman is protected. Even if you have to give your own life, you protect the woman. That is Vedic culture. You see? Okay, it looks like maybe our time's up now. Huh? Time's up? Okay. All right, we'll stop here. We thank you all very much for your participation in this Krishna consciousness process, especially studying so you can be good editors for the BBT. We thank you very much for this wonderful service you're all doing for Prabhupada's mission, for the Krishnization of the entire planet. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.